Oh, I'd like to see it go under 27 this year.
When you say this year, so it is still a focus, even though like you can't qualify for the Olympics in the 50.
Yeah, obviously the 100 is where you want to see the time drops. Matt always says something which I think is very true. It's very easy to make a swimmer fitter, but it's much, much harder to make a swimmer faster.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott, and back with me, as always, is my trusty co-host, Dan. And on this week's show, a little bit of deja vu, we're speaking Scottish breaststroke again, just after speaking to Ross Murdoch a few weeks ago. But this time, we are speaking to Archie Goodburn.
Yeah, Archie has been slowly working his way through the ranks with a big highlight of him hitting the 50 breaststroke Scottish record last season, which of course was brought up last week or a couple of weeks ago when Ross Murdoch came on. So let's find out what he thought of his exploits last season and what he aims to do for the rest of this very important season heading into the Paris Olympics.
Yes, a swimmer I've certainly circled for 2024 and one I'm excited to see how he progresses into the Olympic year. So please welcome onto this week's podcast, Archie Goodburn. Archie, welcome. You're a swimmer with a bit of momentum behind you right now, thanks to LEN under 23s at the end of the back end of last year. So how's your start to the season gone so far?
I think it's gone as good as I could have hoped for, to be honest with you. I've had a couple of new swimmers into the program, a few weeks back from an altitude camp in Andorra, which I think is a pretty unexplored location to go for an altitude camp. But we had a good camp there with Matt and the rest of the team. It's my second camp with Edinburgh, and yeah, things are looking good going into some box racing this weekend and then Euros in December. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Nice. We'll definitely touch upon that Andorra camp. But to start with, we said Elian under 23s gave you some momentum. So what was your experience of it as a meet? Was it like a really good idea for swimmers like yourself?
I think the idea behind it, yeah, is fantastic. And it's something that like I almost could have done with earlier. I think that was my last kind of year of it. And if it's to be something that I would have brought in early, I think it would have been much like really beneficial for me coming out the back of juniors and stuff. And I said that to a few people in a couple of interviews afterwards. I think it was hosted really well. But as a meet for me, like Matt was telling me like, oh no, you got to be happy with this. But I was slightly frustrated and annoyed with my performances. But there's a few things that came down to. And I think, although you said building momentum, it was a great experience, but it wasn't the step forward in times I was looking for. But I do certainly agree. Like, I think I've got some momentum behind me at the moment. I had a great season overall last year, short course and trials. So,
What do you think was missing from that LEN under 23's performance from yourself then?
Well, I was just really like to move it forward. You know, personal best wise, I was happy to come away with a medal. Like on paper, coming away with a medal was a good result for someone on that team. But I just would have liked to have gone there and got some personal bests, but Matt and I tried a few other things out. I'm sure we'll come on to it. But like, I think after trials last year, I kind of sat down with Matt and I said, like, Matt, there's a few things I want to kind of mess around with and just know deep down in myself that like I've tried out all these different things. We played around a lot with skin folds. Like, that's something that I think is really important. And like, maybe not so much skin folds as opposed to like where you hold the mass in your body. Like, I'm really like prone to just putting on mass in legs and stuff. And I think, yeah, if you don't mind me diving down that.
Go for it.
I think like I've learned a lot about that through injury and stuff. So, for example, throughout winter, like last season, so after short course and the altitude camp we went on in January to Sierra Nevada, I was out like legs and groin, shin, just nonstop, like things clearing up. So I really took a step back from, no, not good for a breaststroker, but then we learned stuff from it. Like those muscle groups weren't working as much as they would have normally done. I was doing meters and meters of pull and my like girth of my legs went down and everything. And like the way I sat in the water changed, there was this tilt. And I think at trials last year was the best I've ever felt in the water. And one of those factors could have been that change in their body composition, which is quite interesting. If that makes sense.
Wow. So when it comes to gym work, are you doing less stuff on legs, like less squats because of this, let's say, body balance issue, let's say?
I think, yeah, I don't know if it's a body balance issue or if it's just like something that we hadn't picked up on. I think squatting for a long time has been like something in the gym that I've really liked, and it's just like something that I've kind of like got carried away with it because it's an exercise that I like. But you know, Dave, he's our S&C coach. Like, they work really closely with Matt and stuff, and there's a lot of chat going on between them and really individualized programs and stuff. So Dave's been able to kind of sort that out for me. I'm doing a lot less volume on the legs and then just focusing pure power. And working a bit of upper body strength at the moment.
So how beneficial is it, like, for your self-confidence heading into an Olympic year that the experimentation of 22-23 has kind of found this, and you're heading into what is a big Olympic year, knowing that maybe that sort of experimentation doesn't need to happen anymore. You can be comfortable with what the output is.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, that's kind of what the goal was of that kind of post trials area. There was things that Matt experimented with in training, with volumes and intensities. We actually did a slightly different taper going into under 23s, just so that swimming's, there's so much of it, it's just about belief as well. So just knowing that we've explored those avenues going into like this trials cycle and these other cycles and that taper to come and the gym programs to come, like knowing that we've narrowed down and explored other avenues, but narrowed down to the avenue that we think is the most beneficial for me.
Do you reckon it's good that you have a coach that is open to experimenting in all sorts of different ways? I imagine some people are quite happy sticking to one sort of way of training, you know, kind of meters, let's say, or sprinting, whatever it is. But you've got Matt, who's open to doing almost anything at the moment. Are you happy with that? That's the sort of training you like?
Yeah, I think honestly, I think Matt's a great coach. Sometimes I think he said on the podcast that he's with you guys that he paints a picture in his head that he sometimes doesn't quite write down in the pool. So, you know, you can rock up to training and Matt's got just like a little technique idea that he wants to try out. And most of the time, like, these are things that we then use on and on in training, and I think they're really, really good. But yeah, it means a lot to me that I've got a coach that's willing to try things, and like, maybe sometimes he deep down knows that trying this isn't the best thing, but he wants to like watch me learn. And if he thinks it's not going to be too unbeneficial, what's the word? Too detrimental to my swimming, like he'll let me make that mistake in a way, and like let me try that, because there's no better way to learn a lesson than like make the mistakes yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of the time, like, you have conversations around this coach-swimmer relationship, and a lot of it is about the buy-in from the swimmer. Like, the swimmer's got to buy in and trust the coach.
Yeah.
But actually, what you're saying is there's a coach buy-in as well. Like, the way Matt trusts you to make your mistakes.
100%. Yeah.
You know, there's that mutual relationship that maybe sometimes gets forgotten.
Yeah, well, I think if I turned out to train, I was like, Matt, let's try no meters. let's just sit on poolside and visualize. I don't think he'd let me try that one out. But you're certainly right. I think it's important that there's that relationship in the other direction as well. I think it kind of like snowballs back and forth when you get it right. I really like my relationship with Matt. Like, if it's on a level where we can, you know, like, bounce ideas off each other, sometimes disagree, maybe fall out, but like it's like some of we can, like, you know, we can sort that out, and like in a day's time we'll be fine again, and stronger from it, kind of thing. So yeah,
well, while we're on the topic of training then, you just said you've just come off the back of altitude at Andorra.
Yeah.
So what was that like? Let's start with not the swimming side, the experience side.
Yeah,
because I know Andorra, just like Andorra, is a gorgeous place. Let's go down that route first.
Yeah, so I've not visited all the so-called altitude sites in my time. You know, Andorra was only my second camp, but I did get to go to Sierra Nevada with Edinburgh in January, which was a great experience in itself. But kudos to Matt. Like, I know there are a few people that have been to Andorra. Kudos to like the rest of Edinburgh Uni guys for sorting that out. You know, not all the swimmers in our top squad are like benefited by some kind of funding. You know, I'm lucky enough to be supported by Scottish Swimming, get a scholarship through the uni, which is great, and like I'm so grateful for. But we can't really afford to go to Flagstaff or something like that, like not all our swimmers. So like the fact that Matt was able to still like secure us this high altitude facility with everything we needed there for a fraction of the cost was just fantastic. But And yeah, it was beautiful. The drive there from the airport was insane as well. It's kind of always it is similar to Sierra Nevada in the way that like these places are shut down. Like we're there when they're not meant to be people there. Do you know what I mean? Like these are like winter places. So we're going back there in January. So I'm sure I'll see a much different place. But honestly, it was weird because Andorra sits right on the border of France, so it's like a tax haven in a way. So people are just running up and down the mountain to get like, it's like a Costco village. If you search up Passo da Casa or something on Google, you get, it doesn't say like town in Andorra. It says shopping center in Andorra. Like it's just huge supermarkets full of like bulk buys, like alcohol and cigarettes. So and like on the Sunday, people just come up from France and just fill their car with this stuff. So that was interesting to see. And also, it was a bit of experience for us trying to find fresh food because all this was just like long-term storage stuff. So we would trek down the mountain. Well, we were staying like slightly further up the mountain in this Airbnb, not Air. Don't know if they found it on Airbnb. I think it was Booking.com, but in these wee like self-service apartments. So we were cooking for ourselves, which was quite good fun. In these little like 2 and 3 bed apartments. So we'd walk down, and we just went to this little place called the Carrefour every day for our corn fred chicken breasts. I've never had corn fred chicken breasts. But yeah, that was like the only place we could get fresh meat, but at least we found it. Yeah.
It sounds like you had a pretty good time when you weren't out in the pool, but when you were in the pool, was it a bit more of a challenging sort of week or however long you went? Is it like how long did you go for actually? Was it 3 weeks in the end?
3 weeks. Yeah, 3 weeks.
3 weeks, yeah. How was the training?
Pretty hard work. It always is a bit of a kick up the backside when you get up there, but so the sessions were hard, but the swimming pool there is actually beautiful as well. I need to mention that. The insane view. You just like look off the mountain. I thought Sierra Nevada was good. But yeah, lots of training, lots of lactate tolerance stuff. Lots of pretty chilled out meters as well. But yeah, there was quite a lot of hard lactate tolerance and stuff. But
So what's the effects and benefits of altitude?
the effects and benefits of altitude, right. So I think, well, when we're going up to altitude, you're looking for an increase in your hemoglobin mass in your blood. How much you get can depend. Well, firstly, it depends on what you if you're doing the right stuff when you're up there, but also you have there's very individual responses. Matt's been taking the Edinburgh program for quite some time now, and he usually gets very good responses. I think our squad average was about 5% hemoglobin mass increase, which is anything over 2% is like seen as a substantial increase. So for Matt's average, the squad, I think it was like 12 or 14 swimmers of us all to be in that zone is pretty great job. We've got some pretty mega responders. My girlfriend Kira Sloshin, she came back with a 10% hemoglobin increase, which is phenomenal. Like you can imagine having 10% more ability to carry oxygen in your blood, like what difference that's going to make when you come back. So yeah, effectively more hemoglobin, higher VO2 max is a really strong correlation between that. And that's kind of the benefit you're hoping for when you come back. Carry more blood around, more
And
oxygen.
what kind of effect does it have on your body? So when you're up in the mountains and you're training, doing those lactate tolerance sets, what does it kind of feel like is happening to you while you're doing it?
Oh, just breathless, I would say. Like, just run out of breath a bit quicker. I don't know how noticeable it is for me. Well, me doing my pullouts is very noticeable. So hypoxic work as well, like slow breaststroke hypoxic work, that's pretty brutal as well. Physiologically, like your heart rate just sits so much higher, and your calorie intake needs to go up. Like I lost a few kilos going there. My goal was to lose a couple kilos to kind of sit back in that body composition range that we defined last year. So it's like 49 skin folds. I'm still trying to do a bit of work to put a small bit more mass up upper body and try and keep the legs in the same area. But the goal was to lose a bit of body fat when I went up there and get back into that skin fold range that we've found for me. Yeah, so calorie intake has to go up, and your heart rate just sits higher. My HRV was all over the place.
How do you test for those levels? Like, because you're saying hemoglobin and oxygen, but how are, I don't know, the sports science guys actually measuring that on you?
Can't give you the exact equations,
Oh, is it
but
actually, like, are they taking blood? Is that the sort of thing that's happening?
so we go in, get bloods taken from your finger. Just little pinprick and into these little tubes, and then and then you're effectively breathing into like a balloon for 2 minutes. So you sat, I think the goal is you're saturating your hemoglobin, like you're breathing CO2, producing some carbon monoxide, like, and you produce less carbon monoxide, the more hemoglobin you have. So that way, that vial that they take away, they can test for like carbon monoxide measures, and then they can directly measure your blood, I think, for hemoglobin. I don't know if it's indirect measurement or direct, but.
And is there any point when you're at altitude that it's like dangerous for you? Is there any point where you could be told to go home because it's not working for you?
I don't think we're going to those levels where you'd be told to go home. There's certainly, so we're up there. We were lucky enough to be able to fly Mike, our physiologist, out this time. And he was there for the first half of the camp, and he'll come for the first half of the next camp as well. So the first week and a half. And so you're most sensitive in the first couple of days. And he keeps an eye on our HRVs, our body weights, and our hydration. And, we're only going to like a high ski resort. It's not like your Everest base camp or anything. Like no one's going to be dying. But like, if you wake up and you're starting to show like excessive signs of fatigue on your HRV or your hydration's bad, like you might get you told to take the afternoon off and just focus on recovery and get back in the right place. But yeah.
So when you come back from altitude, then how much better do you feel? Do you feel like you're so much fresher, you've got so much more energy and stuff like that?
Or
Well,
is it the opposite? Because I've
yeah, it
spoken
depends
like
again.
offline to a few swimmers who were racing like the week off Flagstaff, the
Yeah.
altitude camp that a lot of those did, and they felt horrible racing.
Yeah. Some people love it. Some people do train. Some people do like actively race straight off the back of altitude. I absolutely tanked. Like the week when we came back, I was so bad. Two of our swimmers, David and Stephen Clegg, David Cumberland and Stephen Clegg, went away to the North
Norway,
Sea
wasn't
meet,
it?
Norway. Yeah, they both swam brilliantly. Like great season opener swims for them. So I was busy sat at home looking at the results, thinking, "How are they doing that?" Because I was in on my deathbed that weekend. But yeah, it just depends how aggressive your adaptation is, I suppose, and I think generally girls and boys get it differently. Mike was telling us, physiologist Mike, was telling us that boys tend to get it in the first week and girls sometimes in the second week. But some people just come back and feel fresh from it and just have a great time. But
Yeah, I think Matt was saying like Cara was off the charts when she's got back down from altitude before,
yeah,
but like
Cara like
wasn't.
just sucks up all the extra oxygen and she's away. So yeah, like Cara goes into the tent and she comes out of the tent and she's like, yeah, it's cool to see. So yeah,
Ah, oh, it's
she's
amazing.
flying as well.
I hope that has helped everyone understand altitude training a little bit more who maybe might not get the chance to go experience it themselves. If we kind of finalize kind of the training portion of this podcast,
Yeah.
is there any intensity shift right now, knowing that this is an Olympic trial year? Like, is there a bit of tension around camp, or is it still relaxed, happy?
I think there's always a bit of tension, but like I think Edinburgh's in a place where it's really growing, like it's really on the up. So the I know you guys mentioned like you feel like I've got a bit of momentum around me, but I feel like Edinburgh as a program's got even more momentum in it. So I don't know how much of a shift of intensity there's had to be, if you know what I mean. I think the program, everyone already had their sights set on the next level last season, as we're all trying to like be on the come up. It's not like we're already all there and we're just trying to do our best to stay there. It's like a continuation of what we've been doing. I've actually not heard anyone use the word Olympic shift. Yeah, but
That's interesting.
we have, we've obviously had team meetings and stuff and like being like, guys, it's Olympic year. But I think we're all pretty good at doing the stuff you're supposed to do, and yeah.
Yeah, I just wonder if there's any extra pressure on you guys when you fill your headspace. You're like, right, I've got to perform at trials. I've got to be absolutely set for trials, and then all going well, then your mind changes
Yeah.
going towards Paris. So I'd wonder if there's nothing. It's all almost as normal right now.
Think when you're in the train, when you're at the pool, you're there to give it your best every day anyway. But like you're certainly right, walking around daily life, I'm kind of like, God, Like, do I have a chance of making this team like that? And like, what would that do to like my life and like how I perceive my swimming achievements? Like how would that make me look back on my career if I was to qualify for Olympic Games? And that adds pressure, to be fair.
We might get into that a little bit at the end of this podcast, but for yourself, kind of racing starts in earnest now with European short course. So you've earned selection for the December meet. How much of a boost is that going to be heading into 2024 for you to go race over in Romania?
Pretty huge boost. Like I'm like so like honored to be like selected for that team. I was really happy to be selected for that team and go out there with Cara in December. And I think one of my long-term goals is like since I started swimming was to represent GB at a senior level, so I can take that box off, and like that's something I hope to do again. And it's definitely a boost. It's great to have like an end of cycle target where you're going to get some really high quality racing in, and I think that's important for me because I'd need a taper to swim well, so I'd love any opportunity to get a taper and hopefully perform.
I mean, it's a big experienced British squad going. So what's the advantages of racing short course, especially like it's Olympic season, so you know, it's long course is going to be the priority, but what is the benefits or advantages of racing short course right now?
Skills intensive, isn't it? Like if you can, especially breaststroke, where you like these huge like anaerobic kind of demands off every wall, hypoxic demands, sorry, not anaerobic demands, off every wall. Like if you can put together four turns in just under a minute, like very well, it's going to be much easier to do it like one turn, three turns, and then one turn in the long course pool. So I think it's just like intense, like focus on your skills, and I think that has its huge benefits, like this huge time savings for everyone in skills.
Are you looking to like take advantage of kind of the opportunity that you've got given the absence of like Adam and James, who aren't racing short course at this meet, they're purely focusing on long course this season. You're looking to leave a mark on like the medley relays and put your hands up for selection in the
No,
future?
I'm definitely hoping to like get on. Obviously it's only Greg and I are the breaststrokers there that are going, as you said. So like definitely hoping to get some representation on the relays. To be honest, if they were there, there's a 4x50. Like if they were there, I'd be hoping to be like one of the top two swimmers to be like swimming maybe the heat, like for the 4x50, even if those two bigger boys had been there at short course. I think I'm maybe a slightly better short course swimmer than I am long course. And a 50 was pretty good at short course last at Scott short course last year. So yeah, definitely looking to get involved in those relays and see if I can start trying to fill those boots. They're big boots.
Just a little bit.
I suppose in terms of filling boots, Scotland does have a bit of a history of the stroke of breaststroke. I mean, with the likes of Ross Murdoch, we spoke to last week, Michael Jameson, Craig Benson. What's it like following in those kind of guys' footsteps?
Well, just throw it back a little bit to to Commonwealth Games. Like, I think that was just a fantastic experience. Like, so I'd obviously moved down to Loughborough. It was down south after my junior career, and I never really like got to know those guys because I wasn't racing with them at the Scottish meets and stuff. Got to know Wilby a little bit more instead. There's nothing wrong with that. And then I kind of came to the Commie Games and like had never really spoken with them, and like I just had a great time racing those boys. Like, learned a lot from Ross and Craig. Like, they're just in, they're in. It was just an invaluable experience and really good fun, and like a nice way to kind of end their like how I saw them, like from being idols in my head when I started swimming, to them just being like my teammates. And then obviously the after partying with them afterwards was just it's like full cycle for me. It was really cool.
Is
So
it like a pinch me moment?
And I'm like honored to hopefully carry on the tradition, as Ross would say. What's it? He's like passing of the God. He puts it better than me. He says some very
Passing the
like
torch.
passing the torch. That's it. You can tell he's been on the podcast. No, he's a good. They're both great lads. And yeah, so it's an honor for me to pass that on. And I squeezed out his fit. I pipped him on the 50 breaststroke and got a Scottish record last year as well, which was nice too. And
Yeah,
he was
we
the
were going
first
to bring
person to
that
text
up.
me.
We were going to bring that up. Is that a bit of a target of yourself, like the Scottish records? Are they circled for you?
Of course, yeah, I think so. Some of Ross's are pretty exceptional. of course, I'm looking to try and get after them. But as I said, he was the first person to text me when I did the 50 long course last year, which I thought was just like, it's just top class, classic Ross Murdoch move, isn't it?
He is a top man.
Yeah.
How much lower do you reckon you can get that 50 then?
Oh, I'd like to see it go under 27 this year.
Ooh.
When you say this year, so it is still a focus, even though like you can't qualify for the Olympics in a 50. So what's the benefits in focusing of trying to go sub 27 to the 100? Like, how does that actually benefit long term?
Yeah, obviously the 100 is where you want to see the time drops. Matt always says something which I think is very true. It's very easy to make a swimmer fitter, but it's much, much harder to make a swimmer faster. If that kind of makes any sense with you.
Yeah.
Like if you can be much faster, then you can go out easier, and it's very easy to still come back the same time. But I am also at the same time trying to look to get better. I loved racing the 200 at trials last year. I'd never have the same experience on the 200 untapered. But I'm looking to try and, you know, swim the 200 a bit faster in season and then faster when I'm rested as well, just as like a mentality thing. Like, if I can swim a good 200, think how easy the 100 becomes in your head.
Yeah, I suppose the best comparison would be the Chinese pusher Qing Haiyang, because his PB is like 57 point, but then if he turns on a minute point for his 200, that's PB plus 3, which is actually, for him, I imagine, is relatively comfortable. Whereas you look at Sax Topty Cook,
think about doing
just about
swim.
59. Yeah, so then it would be easier for him to hit a minute than it would do for Zach, for example. So I can see what Matt's trying to say there. It would be easier to be fitter than it is being faster. Sounds weird, but I think I know what you're trying to say. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and also, like, there's such... Cam McAvoy's been talking about, like, low-hanging fruit in technique, like small changes in technique on every rep, like, make a huge difference, whereas you can just, like, destroy yourself for a week doing volume and, like, really hard sets and then get, like, this much faster because you were, like, that much fitter. Yeah. But there's certainly gains to be made in both ways. It's just,
So when you say you're looking for, like, the changes in technique and stuff like that, what's highlighted to you that needs to be improved on?
So for me, I had a pretty like severe kind of like fall apart of my shoulder in the commies here. So my right shoulder has a calcification in it, like on the tendon. So at some point, like, it just was getting battered and the tendon like bled a little bit and you get this calcification effect on it. And it just got inflamed and like so weak rotation wise. So we're on a podcast and we got the video here. So like this hand, just this like rotation on this arm just wasn't equal to the other one. So under fatigue, that, even though the shoulder's much better now, under fatigue that kind of shows itself. So a big thing is looking at my breaststroke technique under fatigue and make sure I'm keeping that symmetry. Because
as soon as you're not symmetrical, then that's, you know, you're borderline DQ there. So that's one thing to be careful of.
Yeah, no marshal's going to spot that, but they need to be a banging marshal to spot that. But it's more like once that goes, I'm just not getting as much lift out of the water and hip sync and timing falls to bits type thing.
Sounds like a fairly serious, like, long-standing injury, is it?
Yeah, that was a real blight on that commies season. I think, unfortunately, I was ninth twice at commies in the 50 and the 100, and I think there could have been more to come if I could have kept myself together in those races. But, like, happy to see the back of it and learn a lot about it. I mentioned earlier, like, injury has been a big thing for me since I came to Edinburgh, just a complete change of stimulus to what I was doing to Loughborough, I think, had quite an impact on my tendons, and like I was just seeing inflammation everywhere. We've done a lot of work with like a great physio network at Edinburgh and the Scottish Institute to get that sorted out, and I'm injury free since probably trials last year, which is pretty phenomenal for me and something that we'd identified before trials, like something we wanted to really sort out because it was just like we could never really execute the training blocks that Matt wanted to like, execute. So we're in a
When you
position now to do
say
that.
sort it out, is it like load management? Is it more pre-pool? Is it physio? Is it, I don't know, surgery? Is it, how, what do you mean by sort it out?
Yeah, luckily I didn't have to get surgery. The summer after commies was enough to just like let the inflammation like flow out of it. That whole season was just like inflammation management. But the way we sorted it, like Edinburgh's got great equipment for kind of testing every tendon you can imagine on these like force machines and stuff. So the way we've just sorted it is measuring that and then just general rebuild. Nothing was actually broken, you know, if that makes sense. And I can't pinpoint what exactly it was that fixed it, but there was various things that we tried in like pre-pool and shoulder exercises, and we used a sonification machine, which just like bashes it with like ultrasonic pressure waves, not ultrasound, yeah, pressure waves, and
I thought that to
like
break out kidney stones.
yeah, something like that. I don't know if that's what Matt liked to slag that one off. He was like, that's a load of nonsense. There's no way that's fixing your shoulders. But we'll see. Yeah. Everyone was trying lots of different things and yeah.
Well, I'm glad to sound or glad to hear that it's all better now. So,
Yeah.
what's the end goal of this year then? We've spoken about like short course and how you want to swim
Yeah.
fast representing GB, but what's the targets for, or what's the targets you've written down for 2024?
I want to swim the FINA A time for the 100 breaststroke, the Paris FINA A time, 59.49. Ahead of me is Greg Butler, and two of the fastest breaststrokers of all time. You know, I think Will. I don't know if this was pre or post Chin, but like Will B and P are like number one and eight of all time. So I'm just going to do everything I can, swim the fastest race I can on the day, and be in that top two. I think it'd be foolish not to. Like,
Aim for that.
if you're anywhere near, why don't you just aim for it, you know? Yeah.
It's the FINA A time, the standard for British swimming these days. It's not, is it? It's fast now.
We'll see. We'll see. That's what we put on paper. I think Matt's actually put down slightly faster than that.
You
59
gotta
four
aim
nine.
big.
Yeah,
Yeah, you
Matt has
gotta
put
aim
down a
big.
slightly faster time than that, but
Yeah. Have you got
yeah.
a race strategy going into trials or, you know, Edinburgh International, whatever?
I've not so much got a race strategy. I've got a season plan in terms of my breaststroke, my 100 breaststroke. It's improving in season times. So something that I feel is a big weakness of mine is the ability that or so-called my lack of ability to swim my near my personal bests in season. That's something that Cara's insane at. Cara like consistently swims PBs in season. It's unbelievable to watch. Whereas I'm busy floating around 3 seconds away from my PB. And I think that kind of limits what I'm able to do when I am tapered because it's like a different experience, isn't it? Like I've not got as much experience in that race swimming those times as Cara is able to build up throughout the season. And she can play around with it because she's like constantly doing this time and really fine tune it. Whereas I'm getting as close as I can at the moment, but I'm not able to swim my PB and fine tune it like she's maybe capable of. And I think that's one of her strengths, and kudos to her for because she's brilliant at it. And it's something I've identified with Matt, and something I definitely did do better last year. You know, swimming like 101 mids in 101 mids in season. So I've never done that before, and it translated to pretty good trials. So yeah, we have a little term in the squad called norbs, which is a no rested best. So the goal is to achieve lots of norbs this season. Yeah.
Weird terminology, but okay, we'll go with it. That's a Matt,
Yeah.
that's a Matt thing, definitely,
No,
surely.
I made that up. I made that up.
Oh, you made it
Yeah.
up, my friend.
Matt cannot take credit for that. Yeah.
I like it though.
What do you
Is it?
reckon
Sorry. Go on
what do you
then.
reckon it'll take to put pressure on the top two guys at trials then? What do you think is gonna what do you reckon you've got to do to be able to get on the team?
What time?
Yeah, what
What
yeah,
time?
Maybe
what
not
time do you
even
reckon?
time. Maybe just how do you want to race it to put pressure on them?
That's two different questions. Hang on. That's two different questions.
Yeah.
Hang on. We'll do yours first, and then we'll do time second.
I honestly think second's going to be just a 59, a pretty low 59, I think, is going to be second place.
So that's what I think. Yeah, I think a low 59 is going to be good enough, but then I think the time that you've got to hit is going to be around about that sort of time.
Yeah.
And there could be like three or four of you around that time, so then there's only going to be two places, so you've got to finish top two, I imagine.
The most important thing is finishing top two. I think the point you made about more than two people going under the Fina A time is possible to happen.
Hmm.
Like that's just the state it's in when you've got two best joggers like that at the top of the country. It's still plodding along. Well, no, they're not plodding along. They're flying along. yeah, no one's plodding going sub 60. Yeah, no. That's for sure.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be one hell of a race come trials. Mm. That 100 breaststroke. And you say you're racing the two as well.
Yeah, I never really raced the 200 when I was younger. I think I very quickly decided that I wanted to be a 50 and 100 breaststroker, but I keep trying the 200. Sometimes it's embarrassing sometimes, my 200. But sometimes I just get this, like, I just love the race. Even though I'm not going any kind of phenomenal times, I just enjoy, like, actually racing and settling down into a race. Like, it's not just over like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to racing it at Bucks. I spoke to Ian Wright, the head of Scottish Women, recently, and he was asking me about swimming the 200 Euros. We've not actually done the entries for Euros yet, or I've not been asked about entries for Euros yet. But I'd like to swim the 200 there and give it a shot tapered and short course, because I don't think I've ever done that in about 5 or 6 years. So, but yeah, I don't know if I'll just get a chance to do that at the Europeans representing Britain, but we'll see.
Nice. Well, actually, it's been a lot of fun talking. And before we finish, we have some quick fire questions. So
no worries.
Let's go through those. So what's your favourite event?
Oh, 100 breaststroke.
Who's your swimming idol?
It's Ross and Craig. Ross Benson. That's what we'll call it. Ross Benson.
Yeah. what's your proudest moment in swimming so far?
God, I sound like such a fanboy, guys. But I mean, becoming British champion was pretty big for me on the 50 last year. But like, the most exhilarating thing was qualifying for commies. I don't know if you guys saw that race when the three Scots did it all in the same heat. Do you remember that? Did you see that? That was just fantastic. That was just unreal.
Can't it's a Scottish thing. We spoke to Ross about this. It's just Scotland.
Do you say the same thing?
It hits you differently.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's the hardest set you've ever done in training?
Oh. Matt's had us do 650s. And that's probably like the most I've ever felt lactic in my life. 650s on like 5 or 6 minutes, I think it was. Just like loads of lactic, just pushing through it. But aerobically and like mentally challenging sets, some of the ones I did at the Loughborough National Centre, I think I did 10 threes, but I don't know if this is just a dream. I think I did 10 threes best average. And I think that was like, that was the set where I was just like questioning it the most. I was like, yeah, but we don't do anything like that in Edinburgh. So
have you tried to suppress it so much that you now believe it's a dream and you just hope that didn't happen, you don't have to do it again?
Yeah, or maybe, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it was like 400 or 300 best average, and then in my head I just like was like, oh my god, it's 10. Or you know, I like, made it so much worse than it is over time. Yeah. Like if you ask me the same question in 5 years' time, I'll be like, oh, I did 15 threes max. Yeah. I don't know. I think I did 10 threes, but I'm pretty sure.
Oh, lovely. And final question, guess know you away from a swimming pool. If you just go on a road trip, there's three spaces in the car. You could take friends, family, celebrities, who would you take with you?
Oh, Neil Armstrong. Elon Musk. I'm just gonna go straight. So yeah, Elon Musk and don't actually know his name, but the can't remember his name, but basically the founder of this rocket company called Orbex. I'm very into aerospace and stuff like that. And this is a company that I love, and I've forgotten the name of the founder, the CEO, but yeah.
Look, yeah. Archie, it's been so much fun talking to you. Before we finish, I do want to make sure you get a shout out for if everyone has been watching the Tash that's on the screen. So where can everyone donate? Oh, we'll put a link where everyone can donate. But yes, why are you guys
Give you guys the link for that. But Edinburgh Uni Performance Team are doing a Movember. There's a couple of us doing it. And I'd appreciate any support you can give to that. And as I said, these guys will get the link and hopefully they can put that out for everyone to click on.
Yeah, definitely. 2 weeks in, it looks like it's just about turning up on your face now, looking through the screen here.
We're missing a bit in the middle.
Yeah.
The viewers are going to get some odd angles of me just looking at my mustache in the camera now. But try my best for the cause. Definitely missing a bit in the middle, but hopefully by the end of the month that fills up.
Good stuff. Well, Archie, best of luck racing out in Romania at the end of, middle of next month. It's not even the end.
Yeah.
And we'll catch you on the poolside very soon, I'm sure.
Yes, I hope so. Right. Thanks, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure and an honour. So cheers for that.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. And we look to see you on poolside, hopefully Edinburgh International, if not before. That'll be the aim. That's the idea.
Lovely.
Might be Bucks this weekend if you're lucky.
Yeah.
So Dan, straight off the back of speaking to Ross Murdoch, 2 weeks ago, it was really good to speak to another Scottish breaststroker and one coming through the ranks quite quickly, I feel, after what he says a slightly disappointing end to last year, but the whole of last season felt like Archie really was on the rise. And especially, like, we've spoken to Matt Trodden before, he's got a brilliant coach in his corner. And if maybe there is someone who can break into the three names who've been picked for British swimming recently over the past few years, I kind of feel like Archie's right up there in amongst it now.
I feel like he's been building quite well, actually. Yes, he said he had a bit of a bad LEN under 23s. He came away with silverware, mind you. I still think that's
international,
a bit of achievement
medals,
in itself. Yeah. Like you say, he's got a very good coach in Matt Trodden. The fact that he's able to experiment and Archie's receptive to that, I think, like he was saying on the podcast, it goes both ways, and he likes that idea. I know some swimmers would probably like it in one way and it has to be staying that way the whole time. Archie's open to doing that, which is quite exciting, and which is probably why you're seeing quite a bit of advancements and he's progressing quite well right now. I think he's one to look out for the 100 breaststroke come trials. Yeah, I think he's on the right trajectory, and he's got a bit of, we talked about Scottish breaststroke a little bit, and he's trying to fill some boots and stuff like that, you know, so it's interesting, and he's honoured to be alongside those names that we mentioned earlier, which is interesting as well.
Yeah, I think as well, beyond Olympic trials, like in April time, the short course Europeans, I think he could actually make a little bit of a name for himself, because he is a very strong short course swimmer. I've seen it at Scottish Winters last year. And there isn't an Adam. There isn't a James Wilby. There's no longer a Ross Murdoch. He's there as, I would say, the best sprint breaststroker on that squad, especially 50. Yeah. There's an open door to medal, like European-wise, for him in that event.
Well, you said the benefits of racing short course is to focus on the skills. And the big skill, especially on a 50-metre breaststroker or sprint breaststroker in general, is the underwater phase, the pull-out phase, which he's extremely good at. So when it comes to a 50 or 100, he will use that and utilise that massively to the point where he might even end up on the podium. You never know. But he's definitely, in terms of British point of view, he would be the number one breaststroker going in for that particular event, definitely.
100%. Okay, so that just about rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And me and Dan will be back in 7 days' time.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.